Yeah, so thanks so much for the kind and flattering introduction. So I've decided to make this into a kind of small picture talk as opposed to a big picture talk. So what I'm going to tell you about is not really a main result of any of our papers, but really more like a side product which I'm going to use to illustrate some of the techniques that we are working with. So this is going to be based on joint work with Anton Alexeyev, my long-term collaborator in Geneva, and Enrique Borstein, who was a postdoc here and is now at IMPA in Brazil. So what I like about this side result is that it's something that I can state right away without introducing much notation or without introducing much background. So I can just state the result. Well, I have to introduce G, which in my talk is going to be a simply connected D group, and assume that it carries the bi-invariant pseudo-Riemannian metric. So non-degenerate symmetric bilinear form on the tangent spaces, but I don't require positive definite. So for example, every simply connected semi-simple D group will do. And theorem or fact, well, it's kind of a preliminary version of the theorem, which I'm going to state more precisely later on, is that the conjugate classes in G, they carry distinguished volume forms. Distinguished invariant volume forms. So in particular, they're oriented, they carry a distinguished orientation. The conjugate classes are always oriented, and they carry an invariant measure, if you want. Might break it up like that. So here, conjugate classes are the orbits under the conjugation action. So it's the adjoint action. It sends the group element to the conjugation, and they're all nice smooth set manifolds of the group. The claim is that they carry invariant volume forms.
Sorry, the question, you mean the set of conjugate classes carries distinguished invariant volume forms?
No, every single conjugate class carries one. So let me give some examples of conjugate classes. So the first example is if the group is SU2. It's a special unitary group in two dimensions. Two by two matrices which are unitary and have determinant 1. So as a manifold, that's just a three-dimensional sphere. So here's a picture of a three-dimensional sphere. And the conjugate classes are typically two spheres. I mean, there are two conjugate classes which are plus the identity and minus the identity, the central elements. So those two are just points. And all the other conjugate classes, they're two spheres. So conjugate classes are plus or minus the identity, or they're two spheres. So here you see directly that certainly they're going to carry in varying volume forms and they are oriented. We take the example of SO3, the rotation group. Well, the rotation group, and you rotate, it's RP3, real projective space, which you can view as the three ball with antipodal identification. So the idea is, now this picture is not a three sphere, but a three-dimensional ball. And the way this parameterization goes is, well, any rotation is in three space is parameterized by the direction of rotation and by the angle of rotation. So this, if you want, has radius pi. But then you have to be careful because rotation of by pi in this direction and rotation by pi in the opposite direction is the same thing. So you have to identify the antipodal points on the boundary. So this point and this point are identified, but the inner points are not identified. So here the conjugate classes are the group unit, then there are lots of two spheres. And then there's the boundary with antipodal identification, so it's an RP2. So the conjugate classes are the identity, then there are lots of S2s, and then there's one RP2. And of course, RP2 is not oriented. It's a non-orientable surface. But then again, our group here is not simply connected. So it's not a counterexample in that sense. Another example is if the group is matrices of this form. So with lambda some positive number and y any real number. So matrices of this form form a group. You can think of this group as the affine transformations of the real line. It's just a two-dimensional Lie group, the simplest Lie group in some sense that you can invent. And if you calculate what the conjugate class are, well, the typical conjugate classes look exactly like that. They're just one-dimensional with a group acting by affine translations. Also, there are some exceptional conjugate classes which look a bit different, but typically these conjugate classes are isomorphic to R with G acting by, well, T goes to maybe some other parameters, but it acts by affine transformations. And you see there's certainly no measure on the real line which is invariant both under translation and under dilation. So this does not emit an invariant measure. But then again, this group, one can show it also doesn't emit a bi-invariant pseudo-Riemannian metric. So one does need these assumptions to some extent. Okay, so let me now explain how this volume form is defined. At first sight, you might think maybe it's not so surprising that a pseudo-Riemannian metric is going to give rise to some invariant measure on the conjugate classes, but keep in mind it's just pseudo-Riemannian, so if you restrict this metric to a conjugate class, might easily become degenerate, might even become zero. So the way the metric enters this is a bit more subtle than just that. And the clue towards defining this volume form is if you compare with construction of the volume form of adjoint orbits or coadjoint orbits in the Lie algebra. So let script G be the Lie algebra of our group, so the tangent space to the identity. Let me also denote by B the non-degenerate bilinear form, which is induced from our pseudo-Riemannian metric. Well, the pseudo-Riemannian metric is a bilinear form on the tangent space, so in particular on the tangent space to the identity. And of course, this is invariant. Under the Edgert action, now not on the Lie group, but on the Lie algebra. So the action on the Lie group leaves the tangent space to the identity invariant, and so such it gives rise to some action on the tangent space to the identity, and this is the action. And the orbits they carry well-known invariant volume forms because they're symplectic manifolds. So for static, they carry a symplectic form. Okay, to say what the symplectic form is, let's call it symplectic form omega. For any element in the Lie algebra, it's going to give rise to some generating vector field for the action. So I looked at this vector field generated by psi. I didn't know that psi is sharp. And evaluate at some element mu. So this is point mu, and this is psi sharp at mu. The tangent vector for the action. And let's say if I have two such, then this symplectic form is going to be given by the formula Lie bracket of mu with psi 1 paired with psi 2. So it's the symplectic form, it's the non-degenerate anti-symmetric bilinear form. And because it's non-degenerate, it defines the volume form, also known as the Liouville volume form. So this, you know, this omega sub O. This is symplectic. And hence, it's top power. Where n is half the dimension of the orbit. Or, simpler way of putting it, it's an exponential of the two form, and then you take its top degree part. That's the volume form. It's actually if and only if. But when one knows this two form is symplectic, it's very easy to check that it's non-degenerate and hence define the volume form. And so we can try to do something similar for the conjugate classes as opposed to these Edgert orbits. Well, however, it's not quite that easy because conjugate classes in general do not emit symplectic forms. Now we look at conjugate classes in the group. They need not emit symplectic forms. Or even non-degenerate two forms. So symplectic means closed and non-degenerate. I don't care so much about closed, but they're even conjugate classes that don't emit non-degenerate anti-symmetric forms. And the simplest example I know is if the group is known spin 5, so the double the universal cover of the group SO5, this has a conjugate class which is a 4-sphere, and the 4-sphere does not emit a non-degenerate bilinear form on those. So again, it's not quite that easy. However, there does exist some analog to this two form. It's just not symplectic. I can write down a two form, which is very similar to this Kirillov two form, you know, the omega sub c. So again, I have to evaluate this on two vector fields generating the action. So let's call them psi 1 sharp, now some group element g, and psi 2 sharp, some group element g. And I want something that looks a bit like this. So here I'm looking at the operator bracket with mu, which is a skew symmetric operator for the bilinear form. So bracket with mu is what I want to replace. And the simplest thing one can imagine is adg minus adg inverse over 2. Because this is again a skew symmetric operator. So this two form one can define. This two form appeared first in the work of Lisa Jeffrey and some other people. Jeffrey, Weinstein, Hübschmann, and Guru Prasad. So this two form one has on the conjugate classes, but again it's not non-degenerate. It has a kernel usually. It's also not closed. It's usually sometimes it's non-degenerate, but usually it's degenerate, and it's also not closed. So how can we use this two form nonetheless to cook up a volume form? So the trick is that we need another differential form, some global differential form which is defined on the group. The differential form is the following. So there exists smooth differential form, call it psi, differential form on the group, not of any particular degree, so there's things in all kinds of degrees, such that so I'm going to write down the formula for this differential form under the assumption that determinant of 1 plus Rg is non-zero. So here Rg is the operator on the Lie algebra. So I'm basically assuming the operator on the Lie algebra should not have minus 1 as an eigenvalue. So this 1 plus Rg, identity plus Rg should be invertible. So at those points the formula is given as follows. Square root of the determinant of 1 plus Rg over 2 times exponential of 1/4 inner product, and here we have 1 plus Rg, we have 1 minus Rg, and then we put the Mauer-Cartan forms. So where theta L, so sometimes written as G inverse dG, is the one form on the group with values in the Lie algebra, and this is the left Mauer-Cartan form. So this is the differential form psi on the group. So what we have here is some scalar factor. So this is just a function, which is obviously well defined on the entire group. And then we have the exponential of some rather complicated two form. So theta L is a one form with values in Lie algebra. I act on it by this linear transformation, and then I pair it with theta L again, so I get a two form. And then there's this two form I exponentiate. However, this two form is not entirely well defined on the whole group, because this operator is not everywhere invertible. So if you want this whole exponential, it blows up. It has singularities at points where this is not invertible. But this is exactly where the scalar factor has some zeros, and the claim is that this cancels out. So the whole thing actually extends smoothly. So this is one ingredient we need. So with that ingredient, I can state the theorem about the volume form and conjugate class more precisely. So now the theorem is, so for every conjugacy class, my group, again with the assumption that it's simply connected and carries a bi-invariant pseudo-Riemannian metric. The expression exponential of the two form on the group times this form on the group pulled back to the conjugacy class. This map here, I didn't know by Yoda sub C. It's Yoda. So this is the inclusion map. I pull it back under the inclusion map and multiply by exponential of the two form. So it's some very complicated differential form. And then I take its top degree part. That's the volume form. So in other words, it's nowhere vanishing. So that's the formula. I guess surprisingly complicated. There's something completely canonical in every conjugacy class, but it's given by a fairly complicated expression. And in particular, even if I give you the formula, if you don't know where all this stuff comes from, it's not so easy to check that it's true. So it's not in general, for compact Lie groups, it's quite doable, and that's how we did it, in fact, initially for compact Lie groups. But for general Lie groups, it's not so easy to check. It's not easy to check by hand. At least not for me, because I tried and couldn't do it. Also, so both parts are not so easy to check by hand. I mean, you have this explicit formula, but this really defines something smooth. It's not so obvious. And this nowhere zero is also not so easy to check. It's a little bit tricky. Okay, so we need a more conceptual understanding of where these things come from and where this complicated formula for psi comes from. And this is where the pure spinners come in. Any questions so far? Yes. It's anti-symmetric, so. Then you would get 1 minus RG over 1 plus RG. But this operator is anti-symmetric anyway, so. It's a two form. Okay, so that's pure spinners. Well, of course, that you can only do if the Lie group is compact. And I mean, we know what the total volume is, and I'm not sure if I should state it right now. Well, actually, why not? So if G is compact, then the volume of an orbit, so through some element mu, is given by the formula square root of the determinant of the operator at mu. So it's a bracket with mu, Lie bracket with mu. That's a linear operator. I take its determinant and take the square root. But on the orthogonal complement of where it's zero. So at mu has some kernels. For instance, mu bracket itself is zero. So you take this operator but on the complement of its kernel. And this is the formula for the volume of an adjoint orbit up to some universal constant, which I'm not writing down. And with our definitions, the volume of the conjugate class, so O is the orbit through mu, and let's say the conjugate class is the orbit through x of mu, under the exponential map. The formula is, let's say, it's the operator, it's the orbit of some element g. Square root of the determinant of at g minus 1. Acting on, again, the orthogonal complement of where this operator is zero. So there's a very concrete formula. Okay, so pure spinners. So pure spinners are a very old subject, which in fact was, the notion of pure spinner was introduced by Élie Cartan almost 100 years ago. But they've become very popular recently. Particularly in the context of generalized complex geometry in the work of Hitchin and Gualtieri. I think the new idea was to view differential forms on manifolds as spinners and then look at this notion, this old Cartan notion of pure spinners in that context. So what is a pure spinner? So let's first just do linear algebra. So let V just be a vector space. And let double V be the direct sum of the vector space and its dual. And let's define a map from this direct sum into anamorphisms of the exterior algebra of the dual. I'm going to associate to any such element. Let's say here we have an element x, which is v and mu. I'm going to assign an operator, and the operator is acting on element phi. It's going to be contraction by v plus multiplication by mu, by its product. And then the definition of pure spinner is, so some element phi in which of V star is a pure spinner. So spinners in this context are simply elements of the exterior algebra. Just a fancy name. And it's called a pure spinner. If the null space for this operation, so the set of all x which annihilate phi, if this is Lagrangian, which means that this space is equal to its orthogonal complement. No, I shouldn't say complement. Meaning equal to its orthogonal relative to the natural inner product which one has on this direct sum. I forgot to say what the inner product is. So this, the direct sum of a vector space with its dual carries the natural bilinear form given by the pairing. So in a product of V1 mu1 with V2 mu2 is mu1 evaluated on V2 plus mu2 evaluated on V1. So that's a non-degenerate symmetric bilinear form, and but it's not positive definite. It's indefinite. And the notion of pure spinner means that the null space is equal to its own orthogonal. It's isotropic. So it's quite easy to see that for any psi whatsoever, if it's for any non-zero phi, that the null space is always isotropic, so it's always contained in the orthogonal. And Lagrangian means it's maximal isotropic. So let me give some example. Okay. We should have erased this. So the example is, simplest example is phi is just one. The element 1 in the exterior algebra. And I ask, what annihilates 1 under this operation? Well, I need to have mu equal to 0, because otherwise something non-zero is going to appear. And V can be anything, contraction of 1 with any vector 0. So in this case, the null space is just V. And this is equal to its own orthogonal under this bilinear form. A bit more complicated if I take phi to be exponential of a 2 form. Let me write it as minus omega. So omega is some 2 form. In this case, the null space is going to be the set of all V and contraction of omega by V. So this is the graph of the two form. If you think of the two form as a map from the Lie from the vector space to its dual. Okay, and the key theorem, which really goes back to Cartan, that's going to need is. I think it's Cartan 1913. Is that if you have two such pure spinners, so that phi and psi be pure spinners, then their corresponding Lagrangian subspaces are transverse. If and only if the pairing between the two spinners is non-zero. Namely, you take phi transpose, I explain in a second what that is, wedge psi, you wedge them together, and then you take the top degree part. This should be non-zero, in other words, it should be a volume form. So here, this transpose notation means, so let's say these are elements in the dual of a vector space, and I take its transpose, it just means I reverse the order. So it's the canonical anti-involution of the exterior algebra. So for instance, if I take a 2 form and take its transpose, that's minus 2 form. So you can see that I'm interested in this result, because it tells me being a volume form has something to do with transversality of two subspaces. And anyhow, this is very much of the form of the volume form that I was considering. Let me. So that's why it was very bad of me to erase it. So let me restate the theorem which I erased up there. The thing that I want to prove was that if I take exponential of the two form on the conjugacy class times the pullback of this complicated differential form psi, its top degree part is non-zero. So I've just told you that exponential of a two-form, that's an example of a pure spinner. And what remains to be shown is that this psi also is a pure spinner. So this complicated differential form which I wrote down over there, it has the meaning of being a pure spinner. Okay, so as I said, all of this I've set it up for vector spaces, but it extends to vector bundles. In particular, it extends to the tangent bundle. Of any manifold. Well, in this case, this double thing is tangent bundle direct from the cotangent bundle, and the pure spinners are now going to be sections of the spinners are the sections of wedge of T star M. So in other words, they're just differential forms. And I want to explain how this differential form psi, in what sense it is a pure spinner. So it's a pure spinner on the group. So let G as above. For all elements of a Lie algebra, define two sections of this generalized tangent bundle, Tg plus T star G. So there should be a vector field and a one form. E of psi is going to be the left invariant vector field generated by psi, minus the right invariant vector field generated by psi. So that's the vector field part. And then there's the one-form part, which I take the left Mauer-Katar form plus the right Mauer-Katar form. So this was G inverse DG, and this one is DGG inverse, divided by 2, paired with psi. So this is some section of Tg. So in other words, again, it's a vector field together with a one form. And I also need f of psi, which is psi l plus psi r over 2. And here I take theta l minus theta r divided by 4. So then, the fact is, well, let E and F be the sub-bundles of Tg which are spanned by these sections. for psi in the Lie algebra. So I look at all the algebra elements and look at these textures. So they will span subbundles of the dimension of the Lie algebra. Then, first of all, E and F, they are transverse Lagrangian subbundles. So each of them is equal to its own orthogonal. Secondly, this differential form psi, which I introduced, is a pure spinner defining the Lagrangian subbundle F. So its null space is equal to F. And the Lagrangian subbundle E is what we call related to the graph of the two forms on the conjugacy classes, in the sense that take this bundle, which is a bundle over the Lie group and restricted to a conjugacy class. That's the set of all V and mu, such that V is tangent to the conjugacy class. And mu, so mu is some element. So I've just restricted. So this is still an element of the cotangent space to the group. If I pull, but I can restrict it to some element in the cotangent space of the conjugacy class. So I can look at its pullback to the conjugacy class, so to speak. And this should be the contraction, and that is the contraction of this two form. This. Four author two form on the conjugacy class by V. So this is basically the graph of omega, except that I've this pullback here. So this Cartan theorem doesn't quite directly apply here, but you're almost in the context. We just need to generalize this Cartan theorem a tiny little bit, and then. It's precisely the situation that we want, that somehow we have two transverse Lagrangian subbundles, and they're going to give rise to a volume form. And that's our volume form in the conjugacy classes. Okay, so this is really the general framework in which we view this volume form on conjugate classes. Maybe I should just remark very briefly where now these subbundles E and F are coming from, because I've replaced this complicated formula for this differential form psi now with subbundles E and F, and they're also not so entirely obvious where they're coming from. The picture is this. I mean, this double tangent bundle, direct sum of cotangent bundle and tangent bundle. So TG and T star G, they're both Lagrangian subspaces. And so they are the isotropic directions, like a light cone. So they have the splitting of PG into these two light directions. But I can use different splitting. I can also split like this. Now if I restrict the metric here, I would just get, well, in one direction I get the given metric on the tangent bundle because I have this invariant bilinear form, and in the other direction I get the opposite metric. So this is isometric to TG plus TG bar, where here I mean with a given metric and here with the opposite metric. And so in particular I get a map from the orthogonal group of TG into the orthogonal group of the bigger one. And then E, the subbundle E is obtained by taking by applying this map to the adjoint action. So the fiber of E at some group element G is you take the adjoint action, that's an orthogonal transformation, and you apply this to the cotangent bundle, which is Lagrangian. So if you apply some orthogonal transformation to a Lagrangian subbundle, is to see it again like Lagrangian. And the F is similar. You just do the same thing with the tangent bundle. So you see both E and F, they're obtained by some rather natural construction. And then if you want the two form, this pure spin-up psi and so on, it all comes out of this rather simple construction, and eventually you end up with the fairly complicated formulas and you end up with this volume form. So I think I just stop here.
Thank you. Given that it's a very active group in Toronto in working with reflective geometry, I guess there's a big number of questions. So now's the chance to ask them.
It comes from our starting point, and what I haven't talked about here is the conjugate class are a special case of these spaces with group valued moment maps. So in that sense it's related to symplectic geometry, because in symplectic geometry one has this notion of a moment map, which typically takes values in the dual of the Lie algebra, and we had invented this different kind of moment map which takes values in the Lie group. And while we were just trying to generalize the entire